Asian
Tom Wilson, more like Tom kills somebody.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You let him on the ice more. That's what's
yeah, gonna happen. It's a matter of time at this
point. That's the title of the episode. It is Tom kills somebody. I mean, Wilson.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Brews and Bruins podcast. This is episode 43. My name is Cam Hasbrook, joined as per usual by Chris Gear and Drew Johnson. We are also joined by Ian McLaren of Locked On Bruins and the Locked On Bruins podcast. It is May 3rd on the day we're recording this, the night we're recording this rather, and the Boston Bruins have officially clinched a playoff spot. Not something you're going to hear most seasons, clinching a playoff spot in May, but that's how we're doing it in COVID hockey.
Cheers we to got the haters.
A lot to talk about here because we are finally kicking into gear, but a little bit of housekeeping first, Ian. Sorry, I'm going to make you sit through our ad reads.
No worries.
Drew, you want to start us off with a little DraftKings action?
Sure. Basketball season won't be around forever, so get in on all the action now with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. DraftKings is giving new players a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Claim your free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes when using code THPN during sign-up. I just read it as it's given.
For shots at millions of dollars in free prizes.
Shots on shots on shots. Playing daily fantasy basketball is simple. Just pick your lineup, stay under the cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Feel
the
sweat
like never before. Every dunk, steal, and assist means so much more with a DraftKings daily fantasy lineup on the line. Baseball fans, you may have missed out on season-long fantasy, so now is the time to get in on all the daily fantasy action where DraftKings has even more ways to make it rain. With DraftKings, payday comes every day for players, so what are you waiting for? Head to the app now. Download the DraftKings app and use code THPN during sign up this week. DraftKings is putting you in on all the action with a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. That's code THPN to get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for more details.
And for all you hurling fans, time to get in on the action.
Hurling season won't be around forever. I feel like we should just swap out all of the basketball for like hockey and like every turnover
every dunk, steal, and assist.
Every Taylor Hall dunk you get the rest of the season. $5 deposit at DraftKings. There you go. Chris, I believe you have something to tell us about diehard Boston.
Are you
sports.
A diehard sports Boston sports fan? Well, let me tell you something then. Brews and Bruins, sponsored by diehard Boston sports fans. They have merchandise up for grabs. Like, literally, you can just grab it. I mean, maybe not literally. Like, on the internet, you can go to diehardbostonsportsfans.com and grab this shirt that I'm wearing if you're watching, if Drew ever figures out how to post videos again. Go and use the promo code BRUS. It's not as complicated as our old promo codes. So just use that. DiehardBostonSportsFans.com. Check it out.
Got some cool stuff. Very cool stuff. All right. Let's get right to it here. Brews and Bruins. We got some celebratory brews today. As we mentioned, we are playoff bound for the fifth consecutive season. Is that correct? I think
under,
it's five.
That's right.
Under Cassidy, yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, so, I'm guessing
2016 was the last time they missed.
That was the last dark age. So, I mean, it's been an interesting couple of years, I guess, at this point, year and a half of hockey, especially under the circumstances that we are in, and definitely a strange season that I don't think any of us are going to forget about anytime soon. But at the end of the day, for all of the things that have, as much as we'd like to, for all the ups and downs, this is when things start to really get real. I don't know about you guys, but I'm very excited for what is to come. First quick, I guess we'll intro some beers here. Chris, you want to start us off? What you got?
Ooh, really excited about this one. So I went to a store for the first time in like a year. I am now fully vaccinated. Congrats to me.
jerk.
Sorry.
yeah, so that's especially cruel right now, Chris. Yeah. Come on.
I think I found my new liquor store. They have basically every beer that I've featured on this podcast so far that I have been ordering for exorbitant amounts of money to be shipped to my place. I mean, still pretty expensive over there, but this one I was not expecting to find. I first had this beer when I was in Texas, but it hails from Montana. It's called Montucky Cold Snack. It's just a really refreshing lager. Pretty standard stuff, but man, it's I would slot it above any of the macro brews. Taste has a little more flavor than most of those beers, so I'd give it like a 15, and then drinkability, a perfect 37.
37 out of 37.
Excellent. Drew, you got something for us?
I do. I featured this. I Corona? Think, no. Twice. Wow. No, it's for the first time in 6 episodes. I'm not drinking a Corona, though. That's what's on deck. I featured this before. Ninja versus Unicorn Double IPA from Pipeworks Brewing Company. Yeah. Drinkability. Yeah, I remember this one being pretty damn low. I mean, a double IPA says it for itself, but. but yeah, and it for taste, it tastes a little like, it definitely tastes like dark. That's all I can say. For an IPA, it tastes pretty dark. Drinkability, going with 12, and then tasteability, you can taste it, so I will give it a 21 out of 37.
Nice.
Excellent. Ian, you got a beverage?
A beverage I do, yeah. Actually, I have a gluten allergy, so I can't drink beer. I don't know if that disqualifies me from
beer. No, Drew is right with you. Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm just killing my stomach right now. But
so I'm big in the cider game, and my wife for Christmas got me like a cider subscription. So like once a month I'm getting ciders from all over Ontario, and this one is just a regular apple cider from Niagara somewhere. I don't know the scales we're working with here, but drinkability, I give it a good 50. Taste.
Oh, wow.
Maybe it's a bit dry. I like dry. So yeah, maybe a 30, 34. Again, I don't really know the spectrum we're working with.
We go 0 to 37 here.
Oh, shoot. Well, there you go.
For out of respect for
maybe a bit generous with the drinkability. Yeah,
but it's very drinkable then. That's great.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
Off the charts drinkability.
Awesome. I am a big cider fan as well, but I only recently have really been trying to get into like craft ciders and stuff. You know what I mean? Like not growing up, but like when you first start drinking, it's like the generic
growing up, back when I was a child.
I've been wanting to do more ciders. I've been like talking about that to myself because I like tough it out with an IPA and feel like crap in the next morning.
Cider's
and today,
right now.
I thought about it so many times. I'm going to go out and I'm going to get some cider. And I just never left the house. Just didn't have
some
the
good ones out there.
I think especially with like summer rolling around, gets a little warmer out. Cider is a nice, refreshing beverage to go with.
Throw it on
especially
ice.
Especially for, oh yeah, that's the move right there. So playoffs are going to go deep into the summer this year. So definitely excited for that. That was kind of one of the cooler parts of bubble hockey last season was like being able to set up outside. I know Chris had a ridiculous setup last year. I was very jealous of the San Diego weather. Didn't quite have that in Maryland where I was at the time, but we'll take it. So, I got to do my beer. I kind of forgot.
Oh, yeah.
All right. That's what we did. I am drinking a Back in the Day. It's an IPA by Sebago Brewing Company here in Maine. I drank this first the other day. Usually I will try them for the first time on the podcast, but I was really excited to try one of these. and I immediately kind of regretted it because I've had very many thoughts popping into my head about the beer, and I was like, wow, I wish I had the microphone in front of me right now. First impression, just a very aggressive beer. It is.
I love aggressive beers.
It's strange. It's one of the weirder flavors that I've tasted, and the biggest reason for that is that it's like, it's almost like there's two different very strong flavors that are like fist fighting for control of your mouth. There is a very strong, like, classic IPA bitterness to it, but there's also a very separate and strong citrus flavor. And a lot of the times I think those blend together, and it doesn't blend as much. I kind of go back and forth a little bit, which sounds like it would be kind of off-putting, but it's actually really nice. It makes it kind of refreshing every time you taste it. But both of them are like overwhelmingly, like, I feel like my brain is like trying to decide which one is tasting it the whole time. Like, I think if that Godzilla versus King Kong movie were a beer, it would be this beer. It's pretty much what I'm going for. So,
Kong bows to no one.
Yeah. Drinkability, despite how powerful it is pretty good because it's not overly hoppy. Give it like a 23 on drinkability. Taste, you can certainly taste it. So, a 50. I'm going with Ian. It's a 50 out of 37 right there. Shit. As far as taste goes.
I feel like I undervalued this Montucky cold snack on the drinkability scale.
Yeah, fun fact, I spent 4 summers working on Sebago Lake.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
It's a beautiful area, let me tell you.
So
I'm originally from upstate New York, and I went to school in Maryland, and I just moved up to Maine last summer. Oh, and nice. I mean, I'm from like the almost mountains of upstate New York, so it's kind of a similar area, but it's so beautiful up here.
Yeah, it's nice. I like it down there.
Sebago Lake especially is a great area. There's a lot to do
up there. So nice. Yeah, for sure.
Especially if you're an outdoorsy person, but so yeah, we are recording right on the back end of a 3-0 shutout win against the New Jersey Devils in
was
certainly one of the one of the stronger team performances I think we've seen over the course of the season, especially lately. Really, I mean, they've turned on the Jets really since the trade deadline, but that was a very solid game. I was actually listening to the Devils broadcast just to switch things up a little bit, and they were absolutely gushing about Boston's defensive game, pretty much up and down the lineup. Just limiting shots and limiting high danger scoring chances. And then we talk about this a lot, but more so with other people who come on this podcast who cover other teams, but they were obviously gushing about Tuukka Rask, which was refreshing to hear, certainly in today's world. So,
I don't even think Nesson mentioned him once. Yeah. I felt like they didn't even talk about him.
Yeah, they probably, I don't know, Tim Thomas is still playing or something, but
bunker league somewhere.
We are finally rounding the corner here into the home stretch. I wanted to kind of start off. We've had how many games are we out from, 7 or 8 from the trade deadline at this point? We've got a fair sample 12, size.
I think, actually.
Is it more? Yeah. Okay. So we've got a reasonable sample size, I'll say, to start judging not only the new additions, but the team as a whole. I kind of want to just gauge confidence now based on where this team was a few weeks ago. Going into these final couple games of the season, how are you feeling in general about where the team's at, you know, any weaknesses that you think need to be addressed, and just kind of what you're looking forward to, I guess, going toward the playoffs? Ian, you want to start us off? How you feeling?
Sure, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. I was pretty high on them getting Taylor Hall after the trade deadline. The way the forward lines are right now, I think they're pretty optimal. I like having DeBrusk back in the lineup, even though he's been pretty down this season. If there's one question, it's like the defense, I guess. They haven't really had a look at this team with their top six after having gone through the trade deadline. So it'd be nice to see. I think Brandon Carlo is supposed to play on Tuesday. So it'd be nice to see him back in the lineup. Mike Riley didn't play here against the Devils tonight. So I feel pretty good about the way the team has played. I think they've won like 10 of 12 since the deadline. And, you know, once they get that optimal top six going as well, I don't know. I don't feel too worried about other teams in the East at the very least. I think Boston stacks up well with all three of them. And, you know, once you get to the Final Four, it might be a bit different. But, I mean, compared to a couple of weeks ago, I feel pretty much, you know, night and day, kind of six to midnight about this team at the moment.
Yeah, I think Ken Taylor Hall certainly. I mean, we've been talking about for it feels like, well, it has been almost half my life that the Bruins need a winger for David Krejci. literally, at least a third of my life, that's been a thing. I guess that dates myself, or I guess not, dates yourself as older. So, but anyway, yeah, no, so that's been very good and very much needed, and it's paid off. I mean, Krejci has held down that line forever, and they finally got a guy like Hall. And I've seen, it's not like Krejci's playing any differently, but I'm like noticing more his ability to create because he has a winger like Hall. And I'm not sure, are they still playing Smith with him? I didn't watch tonight's game, yeah. So I don't.
They're not going to break that lineup.
I caught the third period anyway, but yeah, and you got Smith there who's clicks with them well. I mean, I know when they got him, they were kind of hoping he's this like middle six guy. And I'm glad it's working out with him being on the second line because he adds some speed to that line. And as we know, he's willing to shoot the puck from literally any part of the offensive zone, from below the goal line today. To the point. Yeah. Like, he literally just said, all right, I'm just going to shoot this. I mean, they say a shot's never a bad decision, you know? So, you know, you got to get
that. Yeah. That is objectively false.
That's just wrong.
Okay. But it's. Okay,
maybe, if you're the last line of defense and someone is moving toward you and blocking your way, I think don't shoot it directly into them.
Okay, but if you have an option like, okay, I have a pretty good shot and I have like a pass attempt, shot's not the worst.
All right, so Cam, to answer your question. yeah, I mean, I feel pretty confident in this team. I think when we were talking to Pete the other day, his big thing was Charlie Coyle. Like that's your big mm-hmm. question mark. And I think, while it hasn't been answered, I do think that third line with Corrali looks weirdly good. Mm-hmm. It's while they haven't done a ton of scoring, they've scored a couple of times. And I mean, Corrali has definitely looked a lot better since going up there. And I mean, he's been, even when he was centering the fourth line, he was a kind of a weak point of the team. And that's why the Lazar acquisition has been so good, because it kind of revitalized that fourth line. And I mean, if you have two basically 1A, 1B lines, and all you need is for those bottom two lines to be some level of effective and pick up some slack when those top two lines aren't necessarily, you know, maybe getting the puck luck that they need. And I don't know, just put it on the other team, make sure you're possessing the puck in the offensive zone. And those two lines have absolutely done that.
Yeah,
and Richie scored against the Devils tonight too, so that, yeah, that third line has looked pretty good, I think. Mm-hmm. Worth keeping together for the time being.
Yeah, good to get a couple of guys going, like between Richie and Corrali, really just a couple of guys who you know they're capable of a little bit more. I think especially Richie, what we saw earlier in the first half of the season really slowed down a little bit, so to get him going again could be especially powerful in the playoffs when you are playing the same team 4, 5, 6, 7 times in a row. I know we're all, I'm speaking a little bit for Ian here. What I've gathered from him on Twitter is leans more toward the newer age of hockey versus the old style of just slamming bodies around. But there is, of course, some measure to that, especially in the postseason when you're playing a team back-to-back-to-back and having a guy like Richie, especially on that third line where you're not necessarily relying on him to score quite as much, but to go and throw his weight around there. Can be effective at this time of year. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so. I think like we saw that tonight, even Kevin Miller's throwing the body around, Nick Ritchie's throwing the body around a bit. Like a lot of people, their first impressions of Nick Ritchie last year were like taking that 5 minute or the, was it a major against the Lightning? And he was kind of brought in like, expected, I don't know if he was expected to just throw down all the time and just kind of run wild, but this season, you know, he's been on the power play more, his game is more, he's thrown the fists a couple times, but his game is a bit more, I don't know, maybe refined is a bit too generous, but is definitely more like under control. He's fitting in well, playing with some of those offensive guys, just knows the team better, kind of knows more of what it means to be, you know, a quote unquote Bruins type player. And yeah, he's really, I mean, there's a lot of debates on Twitter about like the seventh man and all that. For me, Richie's that guy this year. He's far exceeded my expectations coming into this season. Yeah, I think he set a career high, or he tied a career high in goals already.
We mentioned on the last podcast that, I mean, I think two of the three of us had Nick Ritchie out of the lineup in our lineup projections at the beginning of the season. So any amount of points was exceeding expectations. So
totally
being off the fourth line.
Yeah. One of the things that I have come to admire a little bit about his game, and it's kind of something that Ian alluded to there, is that I feel like he uses his body in like smart hockey ways a lot of the time. It's not like he's just throwing his weight around for the sake of hitting people or like gooning up. Like, I feel like he doesn't take many stupid like Tom Wilson type penalties just for the sake of showing
force.
I feel like he, at least especially recently, the last couple of weeks and really even months, has used his body in a way that's going to punish players and stuff, but not necessarily cost the team. And he's, I mean, using it in front of the net and stuff and in the corners to create turnovers and just create traffic jams and stuff. That's where he's been really effective. So I've come to admire that a little bit about him. That certainly was not something that I was expecting to see earlier this season.
Yeah, he's been as good as anybody could have hoped for, I think, when they pulled off that trade last season. But Danton Heinen was a bit of a fan favorite. He was just kind of a guy in my mind. But Nick Ritchie has really, he's made more of a presence than Heinen ever did, I think, and just seems to fit kind of the mold of what Sweeney and Bruce Cassidy are looking for and kind of a Bruins type player.
As much as I loved Heinen, I think there are only so many roster spots you can make available to solid defensive hockey players.
Yeah.
And I think that's another reason why Anders Bjork ended up out of town. Just
exactly.
I mean, the Bruins have those types of guys in spades and guys who can create offensively. And I think Anders Bjork is somebody who could potentially do that if given a larger role. He just never really fit in with any of those top lines. And I mean, now that those lines are filled out, kind of feels like you don't need those types of players at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you do need some size, and you can't just roll like you're, I feel like you don't necessarily need to have a checking line. You don't necessarily have to have like a quote unquote, like enforcer fighter, but I think you do need some size on that third or fourth line, even if it's just one guy, someone who can go and take the body, someone who can play that physical aspect of the game, because at the end of the day, that's what your fourth and third lines are still supposed to do in a way. Like if you're obviously you want them to produce a bit, as we've said, like, pick up the slack in a way, but bringing that physical element is still an important part of hockey. And it's not going to be like, you're never going to see another Sean Thornton or anything on a Bruins team. Yeah. You're not going to see a guy whose role is to hit and fight. But if you can get a guy who can hit and fight and put goals, like
if you can put goals,
do the goal. Put some goals in the net, guy, man.
Get big guys,
you can hit the puck in the net. That would be good.
Yeah, put some pucks in the net or put some goals on the board. I think that is still a important role, and I can see why there are some fans who are like, you need to get a physical guy, but you know, a lot of times they turn to, here's a guy who punches a lot of people. It's like, no, you don't need that. You need a guy who can hit and take up space out there so your fucking teammates can score. Or if you're Nick Ritchie, also score 14 goals.
The thing you need is someone who is large but also not so slow that they're constantly taking penalties because they're getting blown by faster, smaller guys. And
large and in charge.
You can't hit smaller guys if you can't catch them. And that's the thing. Nick Ritchie isn't a fast player, but he can keep up. And I think especially this year he's taking fewer stick penalties, which is one of the things that drove me absolutely nuts last year.
I was thinking about that during the game tonight, actually. On Monday, I think Cam mentioned, like, Bruins have kind of a 1A, 1B situation with the scoring lines. In the bottom lines, it's almost like a 3A and 3B. Like, you look at the fourth line of DeBrusk, Lazar, and Kuhlman. Like, that would, that could be like a second line on the Sabres or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they have, or and the checking line, Corrali, Richie, Coyle, that could easily be a line that they put out to like hold a lead or, you know, create some energy. So the way the four lines are constructed right now, like, I don't think it's like anything we've seen before with the Bruins or recently anyways, with kind of skill just up and down the lineup. There's no like, yeah, banger, like true bangers or enforcers or whatever, like, or even a dedicated checking line. And you know, no disrespect to Chris Wagner or Trent Frederick, but I don't think those guys are really it right now for how this team should be in the playoffs. I don't know if Cassidy will kind of defer to Wagner. He seems to really love him a lot. But I really like the way these lines are right now. And it's definitely, they're more, definitely more fun to watch than they were like even 2 weeks ago.
I will say about Wagner, he definitely looked better with Lazar than earlier in the season.
Yeah, Lazar's been so good.
I'm a Kuhlman fan. I think, it kind of depends on what team you're playing in the playoffs, who you want to match up against, and how you want to play it. But I think it's good to have depth and options in the playoffs too.
Yeah, I think it's very hard to overstate how important it is that they have those options and can kind of adjust based on that matchup. That gives you a lot of flexibility. And again, it's not necessarily those guys that are going to carry you through those rounds of the playoffs. But at the end of the day, if your first line goes out there and does well and your second line does, and then the bottom six shits the bed, it doesn't matter what your first two lines are doing. So
yeah,
you have to have somebody you can rely on. And then, you know, having somebody you can turn to if shit does hit the fan is really important. So I think that's especially valuable this time of year. And it's a good point that Ian mentioned. I feel like this is really a very different feel to really the entire Bruins team. More different than I think I can remember in probably quite a few years, honestly. I feel like it's been a relatively consistent system of here's how we're going to create this mold for especially that bottom six, and we're going to find guys who are going to fit that and really fill it in like with those defensive-minded players I feel like we've really relied on and hope that they can produce offensively. This is a bit of a different approach, and so far it looks great, and I agree with Ian. I've really liked what I've seen these past couple weeks, and it's still relatively small sample size. I think when you make changes like that, a lot of the times you see that initial boost, and then things can plateau a little bit. But I think it's definitely worth keeping an eye on, and this could be the new mold for this team over the next few seasons. A lot of moving parts, so if this starts to work, it'll be something they roll with.
Goodbye, big bad Bruins. Welcome in medium great Bruins.
Yeah. I should add, I'm not completely sold on Carson Kuhlman either. I kind of earlier this season put out a tweet that like I couldn't remember anything really noteworthy that he had done, and then he scored like 5 minutes later.
Yeah, but you jinxed him into success.
I did.
You
can fire
off. Just tweet that every night. Just
for me, he's kind of just a guy too, like. He'll have a game where he'll get like a handful of shots, maybe score once every, you know, 7-8 games. But I would expect when it comes to the playoffs, if Chris Wagner is healthy, that Cassidy would probably put him out there on the fourth line just for that more defensive responsibility. But for right now, regular season games against the Devils and Sabres, like, yeah, it's been as fun to watch as it could be, I guess. With that fourth line going.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I've always really liked Kuhlman, just being an NCAA kind of guy. And especially when I was with the Hockey Writers covering NCAA quite a bit and seeing Kuhlman win the national championship and everything, I've always been very high on him. I was really hoping he could lock down a role in the bottom six. At this point, I've sobered up. I'm getting drunker by the second, but I've sobered up to my take of he's just kind of this role player that, you bring in once in a while if you feel your team needs that. He's and
though, that's a really nice guy as a depth forward to have. He has speed. He has some offensive upside, but he's a very responsible two-way player, and that's what he was known as in the NCAA. He was one of the better two-way forwards in the NCAA at that point. Obviously, yeah. NHL is a whole different fucking ball game. Or it's not even a ball game. It's no balls involved. But
guys like that exist. The like spark plug fourth line guys, like the Bruins have had them for years. Like Seth Griffith was a guy who just never really caught on.
Holy shit, I forgot about him. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, let's bring up him. But like Frank Vetrano is like the one.
Yeah,
the,
yeah.
Another the one. Big name.
Like, Frankie Vetrano.
Guys who just kind of bounced around those third, fourth lines because, you know, you
Noel Achari see, even.
You can see this guy has scoring talent and you want to give him an opportunity to do that. But like, there's just something that's not there. But I think those guys can be valuable. And I think whenever Carson Kuhlman's on the ice, he provides some sort of positive value where, I don't know, you'll see him basically any game he plays, he has at least one play where he like blows by the defense or something or creates some sort of opportunity. And maybe it's not always a net positive, but I don't know. To me, he's always noticeable. At least
it's good. It's good to have during the playoffs, but I don't know about game seven, but
yeah.
I was talking about that the other day. I still wonder what would have happened if not that Backes was better than Kuhlman at that time, but like to not play Backes in a game seven against his old team, I still wonder if that was that was the right call. But
I feel like you're forgetting how bad David Backes was.
I know, but just the story alone is.
I know it's one of those like I hope we didn't like Babcock him or something. You know what I mean? That was the game he was destined to like break out again or something. But
yeah, not that even just to be on the ice. I don't know, just to have like that emotional boost. Whatever. Yeah. I still think about that.
Didn't even happen. I didn't too much. It was a trip. It was a trip in games. Whatever.
Yeah, true.
I will say kind of that role is sort of the role that Jake DeBrusque has sort of taken on recently too, kind of being somebody who, again, you know that offensive prowess is there. It's just not consistent enough. And I think when he's at his best, he's one of those players that is flying around the ice and you really can notice his speed and pretty much what Chris said about Carson Kuhlman, that he's going to be busting around and once, twice a game, you'll see him just rip around the D.
Which might be more damning than you think.
Yeah. But
let's compare Jake DeBrusque to Carson Kuhlman.
No, I mean, I'm not.
Jake DeBrusque is listening to this and it's like, what the fuck, man?
Jake DeBrusque is a player who I fanboy over a little bit because he seems just like he's so like pure to watch in some circumstances. And, we'd be lying if we were acting like he's been consistent in his career. You know what I mean? He has a lot of potential. I think he still does. I don't think he's ever going to be a true first line or maybe even second line option at this point. But he obviously is a skilled player when he's playing well. It's just I don't know if it's a confidence thing or if it's just an issue with being able to put it together at the highest level for, you know, a full season or something like that. But that's kind of the role that he's taken on recently, which isn't obviously ideal based on what the Bruins are hoping out of him. But reality check, that's what we're getting right now. And if we're fortunate that they're in a position that they can use him that way instead of, you know, still relying on him to be the guy that's going to produce for David Krejci.
The thing is, like, if they're going to go on a long playoff run, you're going to need to use, like, 15 forwards and 9 defensemen, 10 defensemen, like – there's going to be a chance for we'll probably see Jared Tenorti in there at some point and Stephen Camp. Like it always ends up that some guys get hurt or especially just in this especially in the
2016 season. Playoffs where like Sean Corrali was playing second line center in that game six or whatever.
Like 2013, you had like Kasper's Dogovins out there and late
Andre Mazaros.
Yeah, exactly. Wade Redden even back then. Yeah. So you're going to need. You're going to need like the full taxi squad up and ready to go at any given night because there's going to be injuries and guys not feeling it and stuff like that. So, yeah, you're going to see a lot of those guys get a chance to do something at some point.
Yeah. Ian, on that note, I saw something you were tweeting about during the game. Maybe a potential concern was sort of on the defensive depth of, you know, I saw you tweeting about as a 6th guy tonight, Lazan and Saboril. Hoping for maybe a little bit more there. Is that one of the concerns that you have going for the next few weeks as we turn to the playoffs?
I mean, yeah, that's obviously been a huge concern all season long after Chara and Krug left the left side of the defense. It's obviously a lot better now with Mike Riley in there, but I think there's still some question about who is the bottom pair. Like, can you rely on Kevin Miller to play night in and night out in the playoffs? Probably not. Is Jeremy Lauzon, you go with him as the more experienced guy, or do you go to Jacob Zboril, who maybe has a higher ceiling, but maybe a bit, you know, more raw and prone to making mistakes. So the top four, I think, is pretty solid. But after that, I'm not sure if they, you know, turn to like a Connor Clifton or like rotate him and Kevin Miller out, or if they bring in a Jared Tenorti to play on the left side. But yeah, I think there's still some question. If there's one, you know, big area of concern with this team in the playoffs, it would be kind of the bottom of the defense. But I mean, that's, if that's your biggest problem, most teams have that. So it's not, I don't think it'll be make or break by any means, because you're going to be relying on McAvoy for 25 plus a night at least. And
oh, yeah,
Grzelcyk, if he can stay healthy, will be out there a lot. Carlo will be eating a lot of minutes. So the bottom guys will probably only play like maybe 10, 11 minutes. But still, it's when they're out there, you got to make sure that they're making good decisions. So still a bit of a question mark in my mind.
Honestly, yeah. I think one of the things you can do if it's not working out is, I think Lauzon should be in the lineup, but he worked pretty well with McAvoy at the beginning of the season, so you can shelter him up there on that top line. Where it sounds weird to like shelter a guy on the top line, but McAvoy is just so good that it doesn't put Lauzon in a tough situation, and then you can put Mike Riley or even Matt Grzelcyk on that bottom line with either Miller or Clifton, whoever's playing that night. And I think that just makes for a solid left side. Obviously, I think my ideal would be to have Grzelcyk on that top pairing and then Mike Riley on the second pairing with Carlo. But, you know, if I think Lauzon and Miller would be a pretty solid, you know, heavy third pairing that probably wouldn't be giving up too many bad opportunities. I just be really hesitant to have Zboril in there. It feels like he's got good pieces to his game, and I've been a fan this season of at times, but he really feels like a game-changing mistake waiting to happen in the playoffs, and that's not something I'm willing to bet my heart health over.
It was one of those things that I think like kind of was one of my concerns at the beginning of the season was, you know, a lot of these guys in Zboril is a perfect example where, you know, he has that capability and, you know, as a young player, he's got a lot of potential and has a spot on this team moving forward. But the difference of, hey, having him as an option versus we need to rely on him to not make that mistake. This is ultimately when it comes down to crunch time. You know, early in the season, maybe they're not as experienced. You can see some mistakes, but at this point they're in the swing of things and hopefully settle down a little bit. But once you turn toward the playoffs and that home stretch, it's a different beast and everything starts to mean a little bit more. And you can be a little bit more prone to make that kind of mistake out there. So even if things have been pretty smooth for the most part this season, one or two mistakes in the next few weeks can leave a big impact on this season and your development and things like that and your confidence. So having those options so that you don't necessarily have to rely on somebody like him to produce and not make that kind of mistake, I think is really big going over the next few weeks here.
Yeah, in terms of Zboril, I share the same sentiment. I don't fully trust it. As Chris said, it's a game-making mistake waiting to happen. I mean, I think everyone in the Bruins Twitter world knows at this point my feelings on Connor Clifton as they're retiring his number because he's the greatest. Okay, not the greatest, but defenseman in Bruins history. No, but I do trust him more than I do Zboril. I would, if the option is to play Zboril, I would rather Clifton be there. Yeah, he has some playoff experience.
He's not afraid to play him on his offside too. So.
Yeah, and that's one of like Cliffy's like greatest assets is the fact that he can play both sides effectively. And
I definitely trust him more with the playoff experience he's had. And I just see, like, I do see it kind of like what we've said with, like, Kuhlman. You see a couple, maybe a play or two per game where he actually kind of explodes. And offensively, too. Like, Clifton has the ability to go, like, 200 feet to the net. Not that it happens successfully every time, but he has the speed, he has the explosiveness, and he has the ability to make a good pass in that transition.
Clifton's expected goals chart is hilarious because his expected goals for is just like this giant negative red block, but his expected goals against is like the big purple block. Just like nothing happens while he's on the ice.
All right. But he has the potential. No, but I just do trust him more than I do Zboril on both ends of the ice, and I see his
offensive. I mean, I'd rather have somebody who's eating minutes and nothing happens while he's on the ice.
Yeah, exactly. Than like Zboril
who's giving up the game losing goal.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I would like to see Clifton get a shot in there. Definitely if Cassidy's like, "Do I go Zboril or do I go Clifton?" Cassidy, if you're listening.
Clifton.
Yeah.
Cassidy, if you're listening, come on the pod, man.
Yeah, bro. What are you waiting for us to contact your PR
go to Locked On Bruins first, and then come our
way. Circle around. Yeah,
we're minor leagues. we're like after you've tested the waters.
Generous, yeah.
Then get into the beer.
we like Ian to warm them up, and then we'll dive in. And
bounce back around. Yeah, that'll work. One more hockey-related thing, a Bruins-related thing I wanted to get to was, you know, obviously this time of year, goaltending is so important. And we've talked a lot about the Swayman-Rass situation over the last few weeks, or rather the Swayman-Halak situation over the last few weeks. But kind of quietly and you know, with a little bit of break in between. But Tuukka Rask has been on his game lately. Two goals against or fewer in 9 of his last 11 games. We're getting down the stretch. I was looking at his monthly splits. April, .936 save percentage, .193 goals against, 5-0 in 6 games. Going back to March, only played 3, but .966 with a .84 goals against. No surprise to anyone here that Tuukka Rask is stepping up when the team needs to here, winning the big games despite the narratives online. But you know, at the end of the day, obviously this is really when it's going to start to matter over the next few weeks, and seeing him trend in the right direction at the right time is really big. And, you know, obviously you go back 6-7 years, there were issues with overplaying him, things like that. And I think obviously having Halak over the last few seasons has really helped that, and really reliable backups the last couple of years, even before Halak, but, like short season Svedberg. Here. Yeah. Shortened season here on top of having, you know, one of the best goaltending tandems in the league. And Tuukka is still looking fresh despite some, I think minor injury concerns based on what has been coming out. You never really know at this point of year how much is being hidden and that sort of thing. But he's playing like somebody who's ready to go on a roll here. So felt that was at least worth mentioning. I don't know if anybody has any spicy takes on that, but would be ashamed to overlook him right now.
And just in terms of like minor, like you say, minor injuries, my dad's cousin, we all have this like group text, it's like 7 of us that talk Boston sports. He's not like, he's just kind of hopped on he's a Boston sports fan, knows the Bruins and everything, but he's kind of gotten more intense into hockey recently because all of us, once we made the group text, we're all Bruins, and he's a big Pats fan. He was a season ticket holder, and he's like, "So they only say upper or lower body injury? Like, do they ever specify?" And I'm like, "Nah, not till the season's over. You'll find out at the end of the season what the injuries actually are. They're only going to tell you upper or lower body until
they'll specify when they want you to know that Brandon Carlo doesn't have another concussion.
Exactly.
Below the neck, upper body."
Yeah, exactly. I mean I admire that from a perspective, like, you don't want to like inform anybody, you want to kind of keep the player's privacy too, but I feel like it's also a tactic to be like, the opposing team can't know our weaknesses.
Yeah. I think that's the primary motivator more than privacy. I think it's, they don't want anybody like Tom Wilson targeting somebody's knee. You know, not the show.
Negative
shouts to Tom Wilson.
So.
Yeah. What an asshole. I
do want to jump in on the Tuca talk before we.
I was gonna say this is about to turn. So if anybody has any pleasant things to say,
I don't have any real spicy takes. Other than, I mean, I don't think it really matters who the backup goalie is going to be in the playoffs because unless the schedule is condensed for some stupid reason, it's going to be Tuca the whole way. Mm-hmm. Just give him the pipes.
My question is though, I think there's a difference between like who's going to be the backup and who the number two starter is going to be. I think you might keep Halak on the bench for him to come in a game if need be. But I think if Tuca were to go down, the number two starter, I'd give that to Swayman for sure. So let Halak be on the bench as the veteran guy, being there to be supportive if he has to come in a pinch. But and just because Swayman has I wouldn't want to throw Swayman into a game kind of cold in the playoffs. I'd rather
hasn't gone wrong start, for the Bruins in the last couple of years or anything.
Yeah. So that might be kind of my take on the situation. Halak as the backup, but Swayman, I think, would be the number two starter at this point.
Worse for me.
100% on board with that. Yeah. That's something we talked about in the past. But
that isn't a take I've ever actually heard, because we talked about who do you put behind Tuca, Swayman or Halak, but I like that take and I've adopted that.
Interesting.
Yeah, good stuff. I'm not as fired up now. We can move. We don't have to make this a Tom Wilson shitting on party, but if you guys want to shit on him, then I'm always down to shit on him.
So, fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy. All right, cool.
I think we should think of our best Tom Wilson burn while we listen to what the Hockey Podcast Network has to say.
What's up, everybody? It's Jaren from the Hockey Podcast Network's newest show, the Windy City Benders Podcast. My co-host Tanner and I bring our unique takes on Blackhawks hockey. Us on this show have been a pro Carlton guy. He's the right coach for the situation. Giving it to our rivals.
That's one of the things that kind of sucks. I wish we would have had the Blues in our division this year because we are trash.
As well as bringing in some guests from the NHL.
Please welcome to the show, goaltender Scott Darling.
The Eagle himself, Ed Belfour.
Brian Bickle.
David Boland.
Letterkenny.
The show started out with basically a beer league hockey team.
And anybody who loves the game. Find us on all your favorite podcast apps, the Hockey Podcast Network website, and on social media at WCB Podcasts.
See, we need to get Letterkenny. Past members on our podcast. Cam just dipped.
So I do. Cam, do you have a Tom Wilson shit post?
Tom Wilson is an L7 weenie. That's all I got. He's a piece of shit. He should.
Tom Wilson, more hockey. Like Tom kills somebody.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. You let him on the ice more. That's what
it's gonna happen. It's a matter of time.
That's the title of the episode. It is Tom kill somebody. I mean Wilson.
I don't know. Anybody got thoughts or questions for me or anything, or how we feeling?
Ian, how you doing, man? How is shit up in Canada?
I know it's not great up here. I'll be honest. We actually got our first shots, but other than that, still pretty deep into lockdown up here in Ontario, and online learning, basically just grocery stores, and that's pretty much it. Walmart, everything is taped off except for the food section. That's pretty much life right now. It's not looking too good, but I don't know. Hopefully by summer. Maybe. I don't know. I would just
When's summer in Canada?
probably July-ish.
Okay.
I'd just like to see the Blue Jays back up here at some point in my lifetime.
Where are they now?
They're playing their home games in Florida right now.
Yeah.
Their Triple-A park. They played in Buffalo last year. They're kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's not great, but there's not much we can do about it.
No, that's
no more boasting about Canada's healthcare being on top of things or
yeah,
I mean, we haven't put up a good showing here.
Not really a thing where like the US handled everything really well.
Yeah,
that's why things are going well here. It's just like, yeah, oh, we're on this part of the curve because yeah, we fucked up earlier.
Yeah, we just
America won the vaccine game, that's for sure.
Yeah, that too, just mm-hmm, shelling out
yeah,
many monies and not
for we're shelling out many monies for half of our population.
Yeah, we're throwing out doses because people just like aren't getting vaccinated rather than send them to Canada and like India.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. I know India's
it's terrible over there.
I know. Yeah. It's awful.
So the Bruins are actually one of the only things that bringing a lot of joy into my life these days.
Yeah, that's a bright spot.
So at least they're coming through.
That's I gotta ask you about the hat. I've been looking at it. It looks like I can't tell exactly. It looks like a minor league baseball hat almost, which has me very intrigued.
It's OHL hat. So I live in Guelph. It's like an hour west of Toronto. Yeah. And we have an Ontario Hockey League team here called the Storm. This is actually their hat from like the 90s. They've updated.
Okay, yeah, because they're like red and gray now, right? And white. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kind of like maroon and so like yeah. Drew was talking earlier about rooting for Bruins that have it in the NCAA, and it's rooting for Bruins that have been in the OHL is like non-existent because they just don't draft. They don't draft from the CHL really much.
Nah, so, the Bruins just want players who have some sort of connection to Boston.
Yeah,
exactly. Actually, the year Pasternak was drafted, I was really hoping that they would draft Robbie Fabry. He played for the Storm that year, and they won like an OHL championship, and he actually went ahead of Pasternak in that draft.
Still a good
pick. I was like disappointed, and then they ended up picking Pasternak, and like if you were to do that draft over now, Pasternak would probably be second, I would guess, maybe behind Draisaitl still, but
you can't miss. I mean, ended up all right so far, at least.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right. Well, I don't want to keep being too long. I don't know anybody. Any parting thoughts here, you guys? Or
no, just glad that I. So my roommate's truck broke down, and she wanted me to like go pick her up from work, which is about 45 minutes away.
Oof.
And she secured a ride home before we started recording, and I'm just glad that I don't have to do that.
That's a tough ask.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, Ian, thank you so much for coming on. I feel like this has been a long time coming. We did try to have you on before, and there was a little bit of
mix. Oh, yeah. Chris was about to talk about this.
Yeah. Got to mention this.
Very funny.
This is funny. I don't know. So, it's up front. Yeah.
There was no ill will ever, but we wanted you on the podcast, and we had Drew reach out.
Yeah.
And Drew never communicated that the issue was just like a scheduling issue. For like 4 months, Cam and I thought that you just ghosted him.
No, I was like, damn, like I've never spoken about Twitter a couple times, but like from everything I've seen, like Ian seems like the nicest dude. I'm surprised he just completely ghosted us. Like didn't even just say I'm not interested.
Drew was just like, oh yeah, he hasn't answered yet. And then like never
see what happened there. There's no way,
And then Drew was like, oh no, he was just busy. We were like, dude, what the fuck? Hey, we thought he hated us or something. Like, fuck.
It was legitimately like 4 months.
Yeah, he's out. Amazing.
It was because the day I asked, I hadn't gotten a response, and so I probably told you all that he didn't respond then.
There's no way. There's probably either it's past my bedtime or just things are busy.
Oh no, we fully understand reasonings for not coming on our podcast.
You said you had to
including
record your
just
own
not
podcast.
Wanting to be on our podcast.
That would definitely not be the case. Yeah, I've been following you guys for a while. It's fun to find like fun, level-headed Bruins fans. They can be pretty rare, so it's nice.
Yeah.
I think there's a pretty solid community of Bruins fans. I think Bruins fans get a bad rap, but
You gotta find the right ones.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, and
I appreciate you were saying on Twitter the other day. There's a pretty good community of Bruins podcasts going on. And
yeah, definitely. Yeah, and you guys are obviously one of the best ones for sure.
Yeah, and shouts to Connor and Evan doing Bruins Beat. That's a great one as well.
Yeah, that's a good one. Can you all hear mine a couple of times? He's one of the smartest Bruins media guys.
We've had him on a couple of times. It's always great to get like a real Boston accent on your podcast.
It's hilarious listening to him ask questions on like Zoom calls and stuff. It's so
I heard him ask one yesterday.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
I just wanted to say that Ian's reason was because he was recording his own podcast. He hadn't gotten back to me till the next day. Ian like kind of late in the day, so that's understandable. But that's why I said, "Oh, he didn't respond." But I did never follow up. He had his reason. Well. I was like, "Oh, no worries."
That's hilarious.
Well, sorry on behalf of Drew, and more importantly, thank you. It was definitely a lot.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
We would love to have you back on again. Real quick before you go, anything else you want to plug? Obviously, checked out Locked On Bruins daily content there, which is a hell of a grindy, and I respect the shit out of that. That's a lot to do. So definitely check that out. Yeah. Anything else you want to plug?
Not really. No. Locked On Bruins. Subscribe. You can follow me on Twitter, Ian C. McLaren. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Great follow. Been at it for years, so definitely check them out. Cool. It's good stuff.
Appreciate it.
Good stuff, yeah.
All right, well, thanks, guys.
It's been a pleasure, Ian. Yeah, hopefully get you soon.
Take care.
You too.
Later.
Good shit.